I sent to the Louis, the briefing with regard to magistrate remuneration and the briefing also on the Superior Court's bill. This other, the first item we will deal with it tomorrow, still meeting tomorrow morning, the magistrate remuneration. We will deal with it tomorrow. And for members to be on time when the buses leave at 5:15, we will just request the department to be brief. Other members who are not coming with their cars, they have to catch bus and leave at 5:15. So can you please just be brief with the Superior Court? And finally, with Dr. Mandela Liberty.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to make sure members should have received a copy of the presentation. It should look like this. And in the package of documents should also be just a copy of the Constitution 17th Amendment Act that was passed last year. Constitution Amendment Act of 2012. So then without further ado, I may just briefly explain the two polls, Superior Court poll and the Constitution 17th Amendment poll, as it was at the time, were introduced as a package. It took some time to process, but it was mainly the issues around the Constitution that was time-consuming. And when we get to, I will very briefly refer to the content of the 17th Amendment Act because it is particularly relevant for the Superior Court bill. The bill itself, the Superior Court's bill, basically aims to rationalize, consolidate, and amend the laws relating to the Constitutional Court, Supreme Court Appeal, and the High Courts, a single act of Parliament. Those courts that constitute the Superior Courts, in other words. It also unites the various High Courts into a single High Court of South Africa and makes provision for the administration of judicial functions of all the courts, and as well as establishing an integrated system of court governance with the Chief Justice as the head of the judiciary. The bill is aligned with the amendments introduced by this Act, the Constitutional Amendment Act, 17th Amendment Act, specifically relating to the role of the Chief Justice as the head of judiciary and the structure of the High Court of South Africa. And obviously the bill largely gives effect to the rationalization budget by item 16.6 of Schedule 6 of the Constitution. So then I want to very briefly pause at the relevance of the 17th Amendment Act. The First Amendment refers to Section 165.6 of the Constitution. It's a new subclause being added, and it said that the Chief Justice is the head of the judiciary, exercising responsibility over the establishment and monitoring of norms and standards for the exercise of the judicial functions of all courts. This is an important provision. This is the first time that this Chief Justice will actually be clothed with some, I'm hesitant to use the word power, but with some authority over the judiciary as a whole. It is not an unbridled authority, and it's not something that he or she can exercise on his or her own. It is an authority to establish norms and standards, but you will see when we get to Superior Court's bill, it must be done in consultation with the rest of the judiciary. So, yes, it's authority, but it's not authority with or clothed into a single individual person. Then 167 of the Constitution also amended, that's the Apex Court provision making the Constitutional Court the Apex Court. 168 is just consequentially amending the Supreme Court of Appeal, because some appeals can then go from the Supreme Court of Appeal to the Constitution, being the Apex Court. Important for Superior Court Bill, an amendment to Section 169 of the Constitution, establishing a single High Court of South Africa, as opposed to the present High Courts. At the moment, we've got High Courts. Members who were around in the earlier days will recall that under the interim constitution, we had a High Court of South Africa. Then under this constitution, for some reason, all those provincial and local divisions were transformed into separate individual High Courts, and the constitution referred to High Courts. This, in turn, reverts to the situation of one High Court of South Africa with divisions in all the provinces. Then Section 175, an amendment there, that is to make provision for the appointment of an acting Deputy Chief Justice. It is also relevant because if we look at the Superior Court bill later, we will see that at the moment there is no provision being made in the Constitution for the appointment of an acting Deputy Chief Justice. But the scheme that this legislation envisages is that whenever the Chief Justice is for some or other reason not absent, not available to perform the functions, the Deputy Chief Justice would automatically step into the shoes of the Chief Justice. So, therefore, it is not important to have an acting Chief Justice. What is important to always have an acting, or always have a Deputy Chief Justice, and if that post is vacant, you must have an acting Deputy Chief Justice, because the Deputy or the Deputy Chief Justice will always step into the shoes of the Chief Justice when required. Say it will, so I can move from there to the content of the Superior Court's book itself. I must also just draw attention to this presentation that it is a very, very brief, concise document. It is really a summary of the Act. You won't find a discussion of the intricacies. It's just almost the framework that will tell you what to find where in the Act. The content of the bill comprises a preamble that is linked to Chapter 8 of the Constitution and the constitutional imperatives. Then it's divided into 9 chapters and comprises 56 clauses. And there's also 2 schedules, namely first laws appealed and secondly laws amended. I want to very, very briefly, and just for interest sake, illustrate to members the import of this bill. Members, when upon reading the bill, will find that I say 60 to 70% of the provisions of the Superior Court bill. It's really just rewriting what is already in various pieces of legislation. Mostly in the Supreme Court Act 59 of 1959, and also in the Constitutional Court Complementary Act. Those acts are obviously repealed by the piece of legislation, but the content of those bills, or those pieces of legislation rather, forms the bulk of the content of this bill. So 70% of this bill is really nothing new in terms of the court. But if we turn to that schedule, and specifically Schedule 1, and I want to really, very briefly remind members how far we slip behind the times. If you look at the acts that we're repealing, 59 of 59, Supreme Court Act of 1959. Then the same act, Venda, establishment of the Northern Cape Division of the Supreme Court South Africa Act, Act No. 13 of 1976, Transkei Constitution Act, the Republic of Botswana Constitution Act, the provisions of that constitution that established the High Court there, or the Supreme Court there. The same in Venda, the Supreme Court of Botswana Act, the Supreme Court Act of Transkei 1993, the decree number 43 of 1990, Siskei, the Supreme Court decree of Siskei, and the Constitution decree there, and then the Constitutional Court Complementary Act. The irony is that some of the high courts in existence presently are functioning in terms of this legislation. So I think that illustrates the need why it is very important that we move and at last achieve the breakthrough from that old system. Chair, then if we can move to the next slide. And from here on, I will be very brief, Chair, and you must please stop me if I'm going too quick or if you would like to ask some questions in the meanwhile. Chapter 1 of the bill, it contains the introductory provisions. 1 is definitions. 2, the objects and interpretation of the Act. I basically have already explained what objects and interpretation of the Act is or are. And then Clause 3, introduction of legislation dealing with court structures, clauses requiring that before the body introduces a bill that establishes new court structures or that will affect the power and functions of the court, he or she must first consult with the Minister of Justice. Not a requirement that he might approve, but at least consult with the Minister of Justice. Then, Chapter 2, it deals with the Constitutional Court, Supreme Court Appeal and the High Court of South Africa. Clause 4 is to the Constitution and seat of the Constitutional Court, the Treaty of Johannesburg. There's a provision in 4.2 that whenever the Chief Justice is absent, then the Deputy Chief Justice will step in the absence of the Chief Justice. Clause 5, the Constitution seat of the SCA, seated in Bloemfontein, and again, we've got that Deputy President of the SCA provision that will step in the absence of the President of the Supreme Court of Appeal. And in Clause 6, we deal with the High Court of South Africa. Clause 7, the Circuit Court. Circuit Court, again, is just a recitement of what the existing provision is in the Supreme Court Act of 1959. I want to pause very briefly at Clause 6. It says that the High Court of South Africa will consist of the following divisions: the Eastern Cape divisions, main seat in Grahamstown, Free State with main seat in Bloemfontein, Gauteng with its main seat in Pretoria, KwaZulu-Natal with its main seat in Pietermaritzburg, Limpopo in Polokwane, Mpumalanga in Nelspruit, Northern Cape in Kimberley, Northwest in Mafikeng, and Western Cape with its seat in Cape Town. Then Clause 50 of the bill for members who are interested, contains all the transitional arrangements of how the existing iPods will be automatically become the course that we referred to here. More importantly, some of the course, as in visual, as in data, etc., will become local divisions of the division of that court in the province in question. Chapter 3 deals with governance, administration of the courts. Chapter 8, the judicial management of judicial functions, a very important provision. I will pause there briefly. 9, with access to courts, lease periods and terms at the courts. Finances in clause 10 and 11 make provision for the appointment of officers of staff. Clause 8 is closely linked to that provision that we referred to earlier in the Constitution 17th Amendment Act, where the Chief Justice is clothed with the power to monitor and establish norms and standards for the judicial functions of all courts. As one says, the Chief Justice may convene any forum of judicial officers. Chief Justice exercises responsibility over establishment, norms, and monitoring of norms and standards for the exercise of the judicial functions of all courts. It's really just a repeat of what we've got in that Constitution Amendment. Then, 3, the Chief Justice may, subject to sub 5, issue written protocols or directives, firstly in respect of norms and standards for the performance of the judicial functions, referred to in sub 6, and secondly regarding any matter affecting the dignity, accessibility, effectiveness, efficiency, and functioning of the courts. 4, any functional power in terms of the session can be delegated to another judicial officer of the court in question. This is not the bottom repeat of the provision chair, I just catch it in mind. And B, the management of the judicial functions of each court is the responsibility of the head of that court. C, the JP of the division is also responsible for the coordination of the judicial functions of all the magistrates' courts falling within the jurisdiction of that division. It's an important new principle where the judge resident of the division become directly involved in the lower courts of that division within the jurisdiction. Then 5, now, part is any protocol directive in terms of sub 3, A, may only be issued if it enjoys the majority support of the heads of the relevant courts, and B, must be published in the Gazette. Now, remember, of course, that is what I said earlier, that although it looks as if the Constitution Amendment and this is giving this awesome power to the Chief Justice, it's really not the case. It does work with authority, but everything of consequence here must be done basically with the agreement of people that will be affected by it. If it's Supreme Court, then it will be, or Superior Court, then it will be the heads of the Superior Court affected. If it's going to affect the normal standards, are going to affect the lower court, then it will be the heads of the lower court that must agree to such normal standards being issued. And 6 is just explanatory. What are these judicial functions that we're referring to? And it includes the determination of the settings of the courts, the signing of judicial officers, the sitting with interior, what matter, the assignment of cases and other judicial duties to judicial officers, the determination of sitting schedules and places of sitting for judicial officers, management of procedures to be adhered to in respect of the case flow management, the finalization of any matter, outstanding judgments, etc., and thirdly, recesses of the Superior Court. And 7 is just a delegatory provision. It says the Chief Justice may designate in charge to assist him in his or her judicial leadership functions. Chapter 4, these provisions are really a repeat of what we already have in the law. It's manner of arriving at decisions for either Superior Courts. 12, telling us how do the Constitutional Court operate. We know that the Constitution says they must sit, they sit in bunk. There's 11 judges. The Constitution says there must be at least 8 judges hearing any matter before the Constitutional Court. All that's really left in this clause is make provision, what do you do if some of the judges become available, etc. That's taken care of there. 13, manner of arriving at decisions by the Supreme Court of Appeal, and 14, the decisions by the divisions, how they come to their decisions. Chapter 5, relating orders of constitutional invalidity, appeals and settlements of conflicting decisions. 15 is just how we refer orders of constitutional invalidity to the Constitutional Court. I may add there's nothing new here. It's, again, a redraft of the listing provisions. Clause 16, provisions relating to appeals generally. 17, when you have to apply and the criteria to be applied when leave to appeal is applied for. 18, suspension of decisions pending appeal, existing provision. 19, the powers of courts on hearing appeals, that is again an existing provision. And 20, the settlement of conflicting decisions in civil cases, just giving the Minister of Justice the power
There are differences between the various divisions that you can actually refer a case to either the Constitutional Court or the Supreme Court of Appeal, just to give us a binding verdict on what the law is. Again, it is an existing provision that is just transferred to this Act. Chapter 6, provisions that are only applicable to the High Court. This is really the bread and butter provisions. I will point out to you when there's anything new, but just running through them very briefly, persons over whom matters in relation to which a division has jurisdiction, grounds for review of proceedings of a magistrate court, judgment by default, time allowed for appearance. When security for costs shall not be required, disposal of records, removal of proceedings from one division to another, prohibition on attachment to found jurisdiction within the Republic. That was that. Chapter 7 deals with rules of court, 29 rules of the Constitutional Court. Again, we've retained the existing provision, the status quo. And 50 are the rules of the Supreme Court of Appeal and the High Court. Again, the status quo is retained. The National Assembly made one change, however, to the Rules for Courts of Law Act. They've done it in the schedule. They've made one amendment that the Chief Justice would exclusively be the chairperson of the Rules Board. So there's one change there. Chair, I may also add that the whole issue of Rules of Court is presently in an interim stage. We are in the process of revisiting that. So I don't think the final word has been legislated on that yet. These provisions are really just in the interim, keeping things as they are. But there is going to be some further involvement as far as rules are concerned. Chapter 8, general provisions applicable to all the superior courts. Again, it's mostly a repeat of what's already in the law, the nature of court, seals, how you carry on proceedings in open court. Many courts can sit simultaneously, certified copies of court records admissible. How do you get witnesses to attend? What do you do if witnesses do not cooperate or refuse to give evidence, witness fees, matters to be referred to referees, interrogatories, manner of dealing with commissions of repertoire, letters of request and documents for service originating from foreign countries. These commissions of repertoire, can I just very briefly explain for you, it's a foreign kind of expression. It basically, you found in most jurisdictions in the world, just chairperson. What happens if a court, say, in Canada, want the South African court to assist it in a specific matter? How can, through foreign affairs, through those ministries, request a South African court to look into a specific matter here, and they send what they call a letter of rapport, and the commission is appointed here, and the matter is dealt with here and referred back to them. Chapter 8 is still general provisions, the continuation. Keep the next slide, maybe. The removal of persons may be ordered by the court if you disturb the court, etc. The scope and execution of process of the courts, the sheriff's involvement, how you transmit summonses, writs, and other process. What property may not be seized in execution, the offences related to execution. Issuing a summons or subpoena on civil proceedings against the judge, it's a provision that you may not allow issue summons or subpoenas in civil proceedings against a judge without the consent of the head of court of that judge, or if it's one of the Constitutional Court judges or a head of court, then it will be the consent of the Chief Justice that will be required. I'm just saying that if once you've been appointed as an acting judge of a Superior Court, that appointment will remain valid even for period of acting as expired in respect of matters that follow if the matter is taken on appeal, etc. You don't need to be reappointed. That appointment will be valid for those purposes. And 49, makes provision for a number of regulations to be made by the Minister, but on the recommendation of the Chief Justice. Chapter 9, it's an important provision. These are all the transitional arrangements, amendment and repeal of laws, and then the commencement of the public job. 50, as I pointed out earlier, just explain what will happen to the existing High Courts. 51, keeping the rules in existence immediately for the commencement of this law, just to keep it in place until there's been new rules being made. 52, the pending proceedings, you get live. 53, references in other laws, just to make sure that even you may have missed some other acts, but the acts are still referred to, maybe the Supreme Court, the appellate division, things like that, that your references in other laws will be deemed to be references to the expressions referred to this bill. 54, financial accountability. I want to very briefly pause here, sir. Members will probably be aware that the Office of the Chief Justice has been established fairly recently. 54, 51 says the minister must consider and direct the request for funds needed for the administration and functioning of the superior courts as determined by the Chief Justice after consultation with the other heads of court in the manner prescribed for the budgetary processes of the Departments of State. To the Secretary General, and that is the Secretary General of the Office of the Chief Justice, as accounting officer of the Office of the Chief Justice, is charged with the responsibility of accounting for money received or paid out for or on account of the administration functioning of the Superior Court, and must cause the necessary accounting and unrelated records to be kept in terms of this act or that act. The issue here, Chair, being the fact that it would no longer be the Director General of Justice, it would be the Secretary in the Office, Secretary General Office of the Office of the Chief Justice, that would come and address Parliament when it comes to accounting for that budget. 35 issues, the amendment for deal with laws. 36, the short title and commencement. Obviously, it will not be called Superior Court Act 2012. It would become Superior Court Act 2013. Shane, that in a nutshell, what this bill deals with.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, as we have indicated earlier, I will request members not to engage now. To say that we go and go through the document and note those issues that we would like to raise with them, and then we will make another appointment and meet them. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10.
Damn it, that's the damn it.